just remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
Good morning, Vietnam, and good timely greeting to you, listener. Welcome back to our next installment in our super special Marvel series of Play It Again, Kyla. Today, we will be dealing with the film Captain America, The First Avenger, which I feel like is a very strong entry into the Marvel canon that doesn't get regarded with the respect and adulation that it probably deserves. It's a very genre-defying film, which that's a characteristic that applies to most of the Captain America movies, that they are genre-defying, especially Winter Soldier, which I feel like gets a lot more credit than Captain America, The First Avenger. But Captain America the First Avenger is a very strong origins film, and I'm very excited to discuss it today with my special guest, Davis. This is actually his first time on the show, and you'll be meeting him momentarily. He's a huge Marvel fan, possibly the biggest Marvel fan I know, which is a big title for me to bestow. But I'm very excited for the conversations we're going to have, and I'm very excited for the characters we're going to discuss and for what this film means for the larger Marvel canon. We introduce the Tesseract in this film. We introduce Peggy Carter, who I would argue becomes kind of the emotional epicenter of the Marvel canon going forward, at least in terms of Steve Rogers' motivations and feelings and how his character arc will play out in the future. And we just get to deal with some really cool stuff in terms of the World War II imagery, the cinematography here, the coloring of this film. So it's all just a very rich tapestry, and I'm very excited to discuss it. So I hope that you're excited to listen. So without further ado, let's just go ahead and get started.
Rogers, Steven.
Just give me a chance.
Sorry, son.
Saving your life.
General Patton has said that wars are fought with weapons, but they are won by men.
You just don't know when to give up, do you?
I could do this all day.
Our goal is to create the greatest army in history.
I should be going with you. Look, I know you don't think I can do this.
This isn't a back alley, Steve. It's war.
But every army begins with one man.
Five tries in five different cities. I can offer you a chance.
He will be the first in a new breed of super soldiers.
Why me? Because the weak man knows the value of strength, knows the value of power.
That wasn't so bad.
That was penicillin.
We are going to win this war because we have the best men.
Now, Mr. Stark.
Nay, who personally escort Adolf Hitler to the gates of hell.
So here today to help me discuss Captain America, the First Avenger, is a very special guest, Davis. Introduce yourself, Davis.
Hey, I'm Davis, and I just want everybody to know I am Kyla's best friend.
This is true. Davis Todd is my best friend.
Yes, nobody can win that.
Nobody else can win that. Okay. So before we dive into our discussion of the movie, Davis, I'm going to ask you my standard Marvel getting to know you questions. Yeah. Are you prepared to answer these?
I'm ready.
I feel pumped. Like you've answered these a million times to me before, so like we're good. Okay, Davis, who is your favorite Avenger?
It was Hulk for the longest time, but now it's Spider-Man just because they did him so well.
Mm-hmm. Really. It's really hard to top the Marvel Spider-Man movies. Yeah. Yeah, Spider-Man's got a very special place in my heart, too. Also, I'm very interested that your favorite was Hulk, because Hulk, in the Marvel canon, like, doesn't have... He only has the one standalone movie. So, do you like The Incredible Hulk as a movie?
I mean, I got it for my birthday, I think, when I was 10, so that was 6 years ago. And I didn't watch it until I was, like, 13. It was just sitting there.
It just sat there.
Yeah, I was like, I have no need to watch this, because it's not the same Hulk.
Right.
But, I just always liked the people that were super strong. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was always cool.
Yeah, and Hulk, in the first Avengers movie has some of the best moments. So, like, I understand. Yeah. So, what is your favorite Marvel movie, Davis?
My favorite one is probably Winter Soldier, only because it's more of a spy movie than a superhero one to me. And I love, like, those kind of movies.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's why Winter Soldier stands out to so many people, because it just kind of defies the genre expectations.
Yeah, because you want, like, all the powers, and it just doesn't have that.
Right, and the team-up of Cap and Black Widow is just iconic, so good. Yeah, Winter Soldier holds a very special place in my heart. So what do you consider to be the best Marvel movie, Davis?
Probably the best one. I know this is a very generic answer. It's Endgame. It was just such a great movie.
So you prefer Endgame over Infinity War?
Yes, all right.
Interesting. Yeah, Endgame. I didn't dislike Endgame at all, but the first time I saw it, I was just kind of, there's just so much to it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So in rewatching lately, I've come to appreciate it a lot more than I think I did on that first viewing. The first viewing also was more just about, like, seeing it in the theater and hearing everyone's reactions and, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a lot to take in. Like, a lot happened.
Yeah. I walked out and I was like, so how does the timeline make sense? Can someone explain it to me? And still, I'm not 1,000% clear on the Peggy timeline specifically. Yeah. But it's fine. It's a good movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. So what do you consider to be the best Marvel costume, Davis?
Costume? All right. So, back to Winter Soldier, that Captain America one before the end of the movie when he stole his old costume, the, like, silver one, that's my favorite.
That's your favorite?
Yes.
It's very interesting. It's not one that I feel like a lot of people think of when they're thinking
because
of this
question. Because it didn't last long. It was only in the, like, the first part of the movie, but I loved it.
It is a really good costume. And better than a lot of Cap's other costumes. He has some that are a little cringy.
Yeah, they're bad.
And finally, Davis, if you could have one hero's powers, whose would you choose and why?
Probably flying. Flying just gets you wherever you want to go. You don't have to worry about traffic or anything. Just go everywhere.
Yeah. It kind of encompasses a lot of things, flying. Yeah. It's also, I feel like, the most, like, natural, like, human instinct is to just want to fly.
Just want to go everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I would not turn down being able to fly, for sure. All right, so now that you've answered my Marvel questions, I'm going to give some interesting behind-the-scenes fun facts about the making of this movie. So hopefully I can blow your mind with some of these, Davis. My first fun fact is that Chris Evans declined the role of Steve Rogers 3 separate times before ultimately accepting. That's just so interesting to me because I can just picture, like, Marvel being like, we know this is the guy, and just going after him, and Chris Evans being like, no.
Well, who would have played it if it wasn't Chris Evans?
Right. I mean, I just can't imagine. I've had this conversation on a previous episode where we were discussing, like, how intrinsically linked a lot of the Marvel actors are with their roles. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, how you just can't imagine
anyone else doing it.
And Chris Evans, what's interesting to me about Chris Evans is I can't imagine anyone else playing Captain America, but I can't imagine Chris Evans, like, fulfilling other roles, like, not in the MCU, but just, like, I can see him, like, later in his career, like, disappearing into other roles fully. Whereas, like, RDJ, like, will always be Iron Man.
He will always be Iron Man.
And, like, I think that about Scarlett Johansson, too. I think she'll always be Black Widow.
Yeah.
And there's Chris Hemsworth. Will always be Thor. Like, it doesn't matter what else that man does. But Chris Evans, it's more of the inverse, where, like, Captain America is Chris Evans. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Instead of Chris Evans being
Captain America.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I can't. I just, it's so funny to me to imagine, like, Kevin Feige and all the, like, Marvel execs being like, we know this is the guy.
We really need you to play this, please.
Like, just calling him multiple times. And apparently, Robert Downey Jr. reached out to him, and that was one of the things that, like, convinced him.
If Robert Downey Jr. said, play a role, I'd do it.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr., there's not many things he could tell me to do that I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I'm just like, I listen. I trust you, RDJ. My next fun fact is, I've always wondered how they did the skinny Steve scenes, you know, because they're so interesting to me. And so apparently they shot each of those scenes at least 4 times. So they would shoot it once, like, a normal scene with, like, Chris Evans as he exists, like, with his other actors in the scene.
And then once him alone in front of a green screen so that everything could be like reduced digitally. And then they shot it once with like all the other actors and elements, but like Chris Evans just wasn't there. Like everyone was just acting as if he was there. And then finally with a body double in case like the first technique didn't work and they just needed to like put Chris Evans' head on the body double. And so when they were shooting these scenes, they would like use like boxes and crates and stuff for the other actors to stand on so that they look taller than him. And they would tell them to look at Chris Evans' chin because that's where like his eyes were going to be, because he was going to be like 6 inches shorter. And that's just so interesting. Can't you see like Hayley Atwell and Tommy Lee Jones like acting to Chris Evans' chin? Like, that's just so funny to me. And I gotta say though, for this to be almost 10 years old, this movie, like the special effects hold up pretty well.
Yeah. It was a great like looking movie. Yeah, visually.
Yeah, the visual effects really stand up. And I just obviously I've been rewatching all of these movies for the series, and I gotta say the gap in special effects from 2008 with the first Iron Man to 2011 with Captain America is like there's like a gulf there. They really improved.
And
you can
really see that with like the Hulk movie, like the first one.
Yeah,
that's like a crazy difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. The way that they improved so quickly, the fact that Marvel was able to like master the technology so quickly is just really, really impressive. Hayley Atwell, this is a very well-known fun fact, but I enjoyed it. Her nearly touching the newly transformed Steve's chest was completely improvised.
Uh-huh.
Like, it wasn't in the script. Her reactions in that scene were entirely genuine, and she claims that she nearly broke character and ruined the take multiple times because she was just so blown away by seeing Chris Evans' physique like that for the first time. That's just so funny to me that she's that open about it. That she's like, I just didn't know what to do, so I just reached out, and then I was like... And if you watch it knowing that, like, her little, like, smirk afterwards is really funny because you're like, oh, she thought she just, like, ruined the time.
Yeah, she's
like,
ruined that whole thing.
Which is just so funny to me because it's just, like, Chris Evans just coming out shirtless was that shocking for her. Which, like, I feel her. Like, that's pretty impressive. Chris Evans and Sebastian Stan, who plays Bucky, of course, were basically they're the exact same height. So in the scenes that feature the two of them together post, like, Cap's transformation, they'd use special camera tricks to make Cap look bigger, because he was supposed to look bigger than Bucky, which is interesting to me. Richard Armitage has severe aquaphobia, so the scene where Cap, like, jumps on his submarine and the water rushes in, they only filmed that 3 times because he was terrified of drowning. It's very interesting to me though, because like Richard Armitage is a great actor, don't get me wrong, but like when the primary role you're fulfilling is that
to be a one-off in a submarine,
you're one-off in a submarine, you almost drown, like maybe don't cast someone with aquaphobia for that role. Like, good job, Marvel. This one's really interesting to me. All of Hydra's futuristic designs for like their ships and transportation and stuff was based on actual World War II concepts for bombers and planes.
Wow.
Which is very interesting to me because some of the things that you see Red Skull, like his little getaway craft, like that looked so futuristic.
Yeah, you didn't think about that back then.
Right, to think that someone in World War II had like drafted a concept of that is just crazy to me. In the beginning of the film, Schmidt, while gazing at the Tesseract, says, "And the Fuhrer digs for trinkets in the desert." And that's a reference to another Paramount Pictures movie, because this movie was produced by Paramount. It's the last Marvel movie produced by Paramount, actually, because Disney bought it out. But so that quote about digging for trinkets in the desert is a reference to another Paramount Pictures movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark, which the director of this movie, Joe Johnston, was part of the Academy Award winning visual effects team from Industrial Light and Magic that worked on Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's interesting that he's, like, hiding references.
Yeah, I love when, like, directors, like, do other movie references.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll see that in, like, a lot of movies that you just don't notice.
Yeah, and that's something Marvel does really well, is, like, the little Easter egg references to other movies and stuff. And Joe Johnston, because he won an Oscar for working on Raiders of the Lost Ark, he's actually the only Academy Award-winning director of a Marvel movie.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is the first and only Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Directed by an Academy Award winner, which is really interesting because, like, Kenneth Branagh did Thor, and you would think that he would have an Oscar, but he doesn't.
Never did.
Never did. owe the Academy in the way that they don't make good decisions sometimes. This one is really interesting, and I think you'll really like this one, Davis. So the actress Laura Haddock plays an eager autograph seeker in one scene, and then she later played Peter Quill's mother in Guardians. So James Gunn, the director of the Guardians films, has claimed that the woman seen here in Captain America, the First Avenger, is Peter Quill's grandmother.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that an interesting way to connect it?
Yeah, they connected it well.
Uh-huh. And it's like, it's really quick, but because I had read that fun fact, I was looking for it this time, and like, I saw her, she's there. It's neat. Sebastian Stan was actually originally considered for the role of Steve Rogers before he was ultimately cast as Bucky.
I just can't see. Mm-mm. It's not Cap.
Exactly. And it's like, I hate to reduce Cap to like such a stereotype, but like, and I know they would have probably had Sebastian Stan dye his hair and everything, but Sebastian Stan has like dark features. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he's got that like dark hair, and he just seems like he has like a darker nature to him. Yeah. Whereas like Cap is like blonde hair, blue eyed, all American. Yeah,
you can't have a brown headed guy play Cap.
Right. Like, it just, and part of that is probably just because I picture Chris Evans so fully when I think of the role, you know?
Cap.
Yes. Yeah, it just has to be Chris Evans. And finally, probably my favorite fun fact is that Hayley Atwell based her performance as Peggy Carter on Ginger Rogers, and she paraphrased Rogers' famous quote to say that Peggy can, quote, do everything Captain America does, but does it backwards and in high heels, which I just think is such a good way of summing it up. Like, that is Peggy Carter. Like, she can do everything. So it's a nice, and also I can see that influence in Peggy, that she's got that like Ginger Rogers, like classic Hollywood. So now, Davis, I want to ask you to talk a little bit about your experience with this movie. Can you remember the first time you saw it? How many times do you think you've seen it? Stuff like that.
Well, I don't think I actually saw it in theaters because we weren't going much. So I think we got it on DVD whenever it came out, and I just remember watching it. I thought it was so cool because, you know, you always love Cap in that time period, but I also remember it being a little boring, like, because there's some parts in that movie that are just them talking, and I just didn't enjoy that because I was, that was 9 years ago, so I was a little kid. I was expecting the action, and mm-hmm. I remember it being a little boring, but I think I watched it I watched it for this episode, and it was a lot better because I like that war movie type feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really does a good job of not being too much of war and being enough superhero for the thing it's based off of.
Yeah, again, it's like we were saying how Winter Soldier kind of like defies the genre expectations. This movie does that too, but instead of being like a spy thriller, it's like a war movie.
Yeah,
what I mean? Like, it's combining the genres, and it does it well, I think. I'm interested because you said that like you found it boring the first time you saw it, and I don't think that that's like a just you thing. Like, I think that a lot of people have that experience, because I will say, even though I think this movie holds up pretty well, the pacing is a little weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it kind of feels like we put our foot on the gas and we put our foot on the brake. You know what I mean? Like, because, like, post-transformation, like, you have the awesome chase sequence and everything with Richard Armitage and everything. And then it just goes back to, like, him doing, like, the USO-style tour. You know what I mean? Like, it just... And then he rescues all the men. And then, like, I don't know. The pacing, like, the way it goes from, like, serious action sequences to, like, Cap hanging out in the office and Natalie Dormer trying to kiss him. Like, there's just some interesting, like, it's jarring how it's paced, you know?
Well, I remember, like, when he goes in and they had that big, like, montage of him taking down the Hydra bases. Like, that was such a cool little, like, montage. But before that, it was just boring. Basically,
And like, I don't think that it would have been a bad idea necessarily. I know that we were already at like a 2-hour and 10-minute runtime, but like, I think people would have appreciated seeing more of that because it felt like we didn't get to see Cap in action as much as we could have, you know? Because a lot of his action sequences were kind of reduced more so. Like, I'm thinking specifically about like when Red Skull gets away.
Uh-huh.
Like, we don't actually see Cap do a whole lot in that sequence. We see the freed soldiers actually doing more action.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, which, like, maybe they were trying to, because they knew that Avengers was coming out immediately after this. Maybe they were trying to, like, sit on it a little bit so that, Cap was more impressive. But I do think that, I saw this movie for the first time. I believe I saw it in theaters, but I don't remember it as vividly as, like, I remember seeing Iron Man. Oh, you know what I mean? Like, I remember seeing The Incredible Hulk. I remember seeing Thor. Cap, I don't remember the experience of, like, watching it, but I remember liking it. And I remember the world going crazy over Hayley Atwell.
Yes.
Like, I remember, this is telling of my habits as an internet user, but Yahoo was my homepage at the time. This was before Google, like, completely had taken over, And I remember she was the number one trending topic on Yahoo for like 2 days.
That's because crazy.
Because everyone was like, who is this girl? Because she was like an unknown, Yeah. And so I remember that. And I remember really liking it. And I liked that it was genre bending. I liked that it was somewhat like a war movie. And at the time I was like completely sold. I was like, oh, this is my favorite Marvel movie. But then, like you said, like, there's kind of a gap in how long it took me to rewatch it. Like, I saw it, I'm sure, a few times, like, within a year or two of it coming out.
Pieces. I think on TV I've seen, like, bits and pieces of it,
But I don't think that I've sat down and watched the whole thing in years, honestly. Like, and so, even though I thought I liked it so much, obviously I couldn't have loved it as much as the others because I didn't rewatch it as much. But rewatching it for this, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I think that I appreciated, like, the pacing and things more now. Because, like, I care about the scenes where they're just talking. Whereas, like, when I was 13, I was like, let's just get to the action.
Let's fight somebody. You know,
literally. Like, let's just have a rock 'em, sock 'em. Like, let's go at it. But no, so I like it probably more now than I did then. And I think that for the reasons we listed, like, that it is genre defying, that it does have those slower moments, like, that helps it stand out from the larger Marvel canon, you know, because Marvel movies, you know, a lot of people claim that they're, like, so formulaic, like, you know exactly what's going to happen, that it's going to be, like, scene A, scene B, you know what I mean? Everything's just playing to a T. But this one feels more, like, organic and natural, I think. So I like it for that reason. So now, Davis, I'm going to ask you a question that I ask all my guests when we're diving into our discussion. What's your pit and what's your peak of watching this movie? So your pit is your least favorite part and your peak is your favorite part.
My least favorite part is probably, oh, that's hard. Maybe the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's in the movie theater and, you know, Bucky kind of saves him, because I would have kind of liked to see, like, a roughed up Steve Evans, like, coming out and, like, wanting to get him back, but knowing he couldn't, type thing. And then probably the best part is him rescuing all the guys from prison.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
It's interesting to me that, because, like, that's arguably a better action sequence than the final confrontation with Red Skull. There's just not that much to it. Like, they're on the jet, and you know what I mean?
You know it's going to happen.
Right, so it's interesting to me that the most, like, exciting confrontation is in the middle of the movie. You know what I mean? Because that doesn't happen very often in superhero movies. My pit, so my least favorite part, I was thinking, because I always ask this question, so I had this question rolling around in my brain as I was rewatching, and before I started the movie, I fully was set. I was like, oh, my pit's going to be when Bucky falls off the train. Like, I just knew that. And then it wasn't, and I think that the reason might be, like, I know that's not the end of Bucky's story anymore.
He's gonna come back.
Right. So, like, in 2011, that was a really sad moment. In 2020, I'm like, it's still sad, but other moments, so my pit this time, honestly, and I was not expecting this scene to get me the way that it did, is Peggy's reaction when Steve goes down in the ice.
Really?
Yeah, like, it really got me this time. I was like, good job, Chris Evans and Hayley Atwell. Like, y'all did pretty good. Because it just, it's rough.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is I think that that moment seems more bittersweet to me now, knowing what's going to happen in Endgame. Like, I don't know why that is, because you would think, like, knowing they get a happy ending, spoilers, if you haven't seen Endgame. But I really hope you've seen Endgame by this point in time.
Now.
Yeah. It made almost $3 billion. Yeah, you have seen no excuse.
Now, that's on you.
Yeah. But you would think, like, knowing that they get a happy ending, it would feel less bittersweet for some reason, like, more sweet, less bitter. But I don't know. I guess because I think the Endgame really made me, like, frame Peggy's story in a different way rewatching. Because I hate to put it this way, like, Peggy Carter is a phenomenal character and she's always been interesting to me. But, like, knowing that we loop back around to her story, like, made it seem more important in some way.
Yeah.
Like, it made me focus on it more this rewatch than I probably would have, because, like I said, as cool of a character as she is and as much as I've always loved her, she kind of fades into the background after this movie.
I mean, you see her, in Winter Soldier as, like, an old woman. And then in Endgame when they go back in time and they're in her office.
Right. And you see her funeral in Civil War, I think, right? Yeah. But, like...
Yeah.
So, she's still there. Like, she's still a presence, but she's just not as central as she is in this movie. But knowing that Cap is going to ultimately make the decision to come back and get that dance.
End up with her.
Yeah. Just made it more bittersweet, I think. Yeah. So that scene packed the emotional wallop for me. And then my peak, this has always been my peak and it's such a weird moment, but I've always really loved it. It's the moment where Steve retrieves the flag, where he just walks and pulls the screw out and the flagpole falls, because I love moments in movies where, like, one singular, like, piece of dialogue or one singular action just, like, sums up the entire character for you, and that moment sums up Steve Rogers. You know, he's thinking, he's all heart but he's also all head. You know what I mean? He thinks things through, he's smart, he's tactical, and that's what sets him apart from everyone else in the program. And I like the moment with the grenade too, but I think that the flag moment coming first, it just has that impact. And I love him just, like, hopping in the car and being like, all right, I'm getting my ride, you know?
Something funny about that grenade scene. I was watching, have you ever heard of CinemaSins?
Yeah.
That where they do. And so they're making fun of that. They're like, so you pick the guy that's going to jump on the grenade instead of picking all the normal people that are going to run away and do what they're supposed to.
It's true. I think that it's just, like, it singles him out for Tommy Lee Jones' character, you know, that he is the... Because, you know, he said, like, he's not a soldier. He's just, you know, but in that moment, he proves that he's got the heart of a soldier and the courage of a soldier. But and then he's still skinny.
Yeah, he's still skinny.
it's a great line. So, Davis, do you have any favorite shots from this movie?
So, I was thinking about this. It's when he's on that motorcycle and he's riding through the war zone. I just think that sums up, like, you know, because I've always watched some, like, cartoons before this, and he always, always has a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. I just love that part of the movie.
Yeah, that one, that's the moment, like, I know that he's Cap after the serum and everything, but that's the moment where I'm like, oh, he's Captain America.
He's Captain America,
you know?
Yes.
And I think that's the moment where I was like, oh, Chris Evans is Captain America, you know what I mean? I have quite a few shots that jumped out at me on this rewatch that I really enjoyed. I think this is, like, a really beautifully done movie. Like, the cinematography
really
is really good. I really enjoyed, this is a very early one, but the blood-covered Hydra insignia on the lapel, you know what I'm talking about? Like, early on, where it's, like, the blood of the man he shot. I just thought it's really powerful imagery, like the bloody Hydra. And then I love the way the camera lingers on Peggy after the grenade scene. And she just kind of, like, has this big smile on her face. Like, it meant a lot to her that he proved his worthiness right there. So I like that moment. And then I love the way it's shot, pun intended shot, when Peggy shoots the getaway driver.
Yeah.
Because, like, you, like, it kind of follows her bullet very quickly, but her gun almost looks, like, three-dimensional. Because, like, the camera is so intently focused on the gun and she's just in the background. But then when she shoots the driver, you get the close up of like the blood popping, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just like a really good, really quick, the way it's shot and the way it's edited just makes that scene really, really good. And then this is a random one, but I noticed it this rewatch. After Cap has gone out and been heckled by all of the soldiers and they're like, bring the girls back out. And he's like, I think they only know the one song. There's the moment where there's like a little area of stairs that leads up to the stage, and the camera lingers on the feet, and it's like Cap going down and the girls and going up.
That's and, such a good.
Yeah, it's just like a very artfully done shot. So I enjoy that one. And then I like the visual of Red Skull and Cap being pulled apart. Uh-huh. On those retractable like bridges, you know, with the fire under
with
them.
The fire under it.
Like that's just a really powerful shot.
Yeah, it just shows that they're so opposite.
Yeah, and they're on opposite ends of the frame, and you have the fire just billowing, and the fire. There's some really interesting things done with the fire in that scene. So I just think that's a really well shot scene all around. And then I love the moment where I think it's Howard Stark, isn't it? It's either Howard Stark or Tommy Lee Jones. One of them's like, we can't just go knock on the front door. And
yes, one of them. I can't remember.
I think it's Stark, but I could be wrong. Anyways, but then Cap just says, "Why not?" And everyone turns to look at him, like in unison, like everyone turns at the exact same time. And so you see the shot from like Cap's perspective, with like all the eyes turning towards him.
Yeah.
And I just think that's a good one. And then my last one is the shot of the shield holding the door open when after he's thrown it in the final confrontation. I just like that one a lot.
They've done that a lot in other movies, too.
Yeah.
Like and the shield just holding it.
Yeah, so I feel like this one being, like, the original, like, it's a moment that bears mentioning, you know, because they've definitely done callbacks to that shot many, many times. So, all the shots of the shield close-up are good. I also like that we see the progression of the shield throughout the movie. Like, some people might think it's, like, too much, but I love the trash can lid.
And the car door.
The car door and, like, the progression of, and just, like, of course, the fact that Cap uses a shield, which is, like, a method of defense, not offense. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, the fact that he's not, like, juxtapose it to Thor's hammer.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean?
That's an offensive thing, yeah.
Right. Like, their style of weapon just reveals so much about their character, which I just think is very interesting. So, now I gotta ask you, Davis. Do you have any favorite lines from this movie? And because it's a Marvel movie, of course we have favorite lines from this movie. So what are some of yours?
I'm blanking.
We already mentioned he's still skinny, but that's a good one to me. I love when Steve's like, "What do you think?" and Peggy just shoots him, and then he's like, "I think it works."
That was such a great scene.
Just all around a great scene. I'm trying to think. Oh, I like Bucky's, I'm going to get it wrong. I don't know it verbatim, but when like Bucky sees Steve and he's like, "You're taller." And that's when Steve comes out from the serum, they're like, "How do you feel?" Taller.
Yeah, taller.
So I like those a lot. One moment that's not as funny, that's more serious, but I really enjoy, and again, I'm not going to get it verbatim, but there's a moment where Red Skull is talking, I believe it's when he's talking to the other, like, Nazi officers before he vaporizes them, where he's talking about how, like, they're saying that he's caught up in, like, stories and, like, mythology and magic, and it's not real, and he's like, "Well, it's science."
Yeah.
Like, and so it's basically the implication that, like, things we don't understand, we just call them, like, magic.
Yeah.
Which is a nice callback, I think, to the line in Thor.
Yeah.
Where Jane is like, "Magic's just science we don't understand yet." So I think that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I like that Marvel, like, wove that thread all the way through phase one.
Like, even in Doctor Strange, he didn't even believe that it was magic. He believed it was science.
Right. And I just think that's a really, like, beautiful way to look at it. You know what I mean? That, like, we write things off that we don't understand, but we don't have to. We can seek to understand them. So I like that line. I also like it when Peggy is like, "You can't give me orders." And he's like, "The heck I can't. I'm a captain." So that's a good one. I mean, he and Bucky have lots of great exchanges. We can't do an episode without mentioning I Can Do This All Day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because that just sums up Steve again. So, yeah, as a Marvel movie, of course, it's very, very quotable. I'm trying to see if there are any. That wasn't so bad after he's been injected. And Dr. Erskine is like, that was the penicillin. So there's lots of good lines. I like the I love how awkward Steve is and how he doesn't understand what fondue is, and so he's like, how do I know you're not fondueing? And then it cuts to Stark and he's like, fondue's just cheese and bread, my friend. So Howard Stark has some good ones too. I love his like recovery on stage after the car falls, and he's like, well, I did say in the future, I think, which we'll talk about him more when we get to like the specific characters, but I think that Dominic Cooper does some really interesting things with Howard Stark.
Yeah. And you can really tell how he is Iron Man's father.
They
share a lot.
He ties it all together, like RDJ's Tony and like also being his own thing. Like he does a really great job. So what are, before we get into like the cast and everything, what are some aspects of this movie that you think are handled really well, Davis?
I think the Chris Evans, of course, being small and then turning big was handled very well. I think Red Skull was handled very well. I know we're not getting into like characters, but I think his progression throughout the movie and how he always had that one goal, I think was handled very well. And then I think Steve coming out of the ice at the end was handled very well with Nick Fury and all them. I thought that was a great scene.
I on this rewatch, I kept looking in the background at like all the stuff in Times Square, because I was like, you know what? There are so many like super famous actors throughout the MCU that surely one of them is on like a billboard somewhere in the background. So I was looking, I didn't find one, but if anyone listening knows that, like, cause like Scarlett Johansson, like Natalie Portman, like all these actresses are like the faces of so many like fashion lines and perfumes and stuff. I'm like, surely they're somewhere on a billboard. So if anyone knows, if there's like anyone in the background, I saw Daniel Radcliffe's face in the background. He's not connected to the MCU yet, but I was like, Harry Potter. But yeah, I do think that scene's handled really well. I think that like the eeriness of it is played really well, because you as a viewer don't, like, you're just as in the dark as Cap is. And I like that you don't know why he's so suspicious until he says he was at that baseball game. I just think that the tone of that scene is handled really well. A couple things that I wanted to mention is I really like the coloring of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of got like a sepia-esque filter over a lot of the scenes that are in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really good way of like putting your viewer in a certain headspace.
Yeah,
and
in the time.
Yeah. Like visually, even without putting at the bottom, like you don't need a subtitle telling you what year it is. You can just tell from the filter. And a lot of scenes are colored just really well. So I think that's something that's handled really nicely. And then one thing that I really like about this movie that I notice and appreciate a lot more on this rewatch is I feel like this film in particular like leans into some of its cartoony aspects really well. Like the portrayal of like Zola and like you were mentioning Red Skull. Like there are a lot of things that just feel kind of like the old school like cartoons. You know what I mean? And like there are moments too, like the storefront in Brooklyn, like the antique store, like the exterior shot just kind of looks like something you see in a cartoon. And I think that that's a nice way of this movie, like, again, putting the viewer in a certain headspace. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, yeah, I'm watching a comic book movie, but like it's a testament to Joe Johnston and to this movie as a whole that like it never feels like too ridiculous.
Cartoon, yeah.
Yeah. Like it's like just enough. And it kind of reminds me of in the Thor movie, Kenneth Branagh talked a lot about how he wanted it visually to like feel like reading a comic book. Which is why, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but a lot of people complain about this with Thor. A lot of the shots are kind of diagonal in Thor.
I never noticed, yeah.
They're Dutch angles, and Kenneth Branagh did that on purpose because he said that's how like comic book panels look a lot of the time, like they're slightly diagonal. And so watching this, I kind of felt like Thor makes you feel like you're reading a comic book. Captain America the First Avenger kind of makes you feel like you're watching an old Avengers cartoon. Yeah. And I like that. I think they complement each other really well. And then I wanted to ask you, Davis, are there any things that watching this movie you noticed Marvel found their footing with those aspects of filmmaking like later on? Are there any things that you felt like were just kind of dated?
Dated.
Yeah.
Like we said, I think they did better on not keeping the scenes where they just talk too long. I think they found their timing better.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think they found how to use side characters better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I really love Peggy and Howard, but some of the others, like the soldiers, you just don't know much about them.
Yeah.
And
the Howling Commandos are like really important to Cap in the like comic books and in some of the cartoons and stuff. And so I agree with you that watching it, I had completely forgotten about some of them. Like, I forgot that they were in the movie. And so watching it, I was like, oh, shoot, the dude from Suits is one of the Howling Commandos. So, I agree with you that they got better with side characters.
Yeah, side characters. But yeah, that's probably about it. I think they did a lot of things good on this movie. It's still not my favorite Cap, but it's a good one.
Yeah, well, it's hard when the other two Cap installments are Winter Soldier and Civil War. Good. Yeah, but I agree with you on the side character thing that I think Marvel, it's interesting because I feel like that's a way that you could judge Marvel. Like, you could go through and be like, how does this film do in like fleshing out their side characters? Because I think that there are certain Marvel movies that do it really well, and there are some that just they just kind of fall flat. But you're right though that Peggy and Howard are really good supporting
they really, like,
characters.
Fleshed them out.
Yeah, and Bucky too. Mm-hmm.
But even like the general, you don't know much about him.
Right, and watching it too, I was like, so like, what is his relationship with Peggy and like the fledgling thing that will become S.H.I.E.L.D.? Like, how is he tied up in this? And because he seems so eager to like reprimand Peggy at one point, but then later he seems like fond of her. And so I just feel like the dynamic is a little too fluid. Uh-huh. Like, I would like to see the progression more plainly. But again, I think a lot of the things that we're noting that like we wish they would have improved upon, as I said earlier, like they probably were looking at the fact like, oh, we've already got a 2-hour and 10-minute movie.
How much
extra stuff can we put in? And that's what I would love to see, like a director's cut, like 3-hour version of this movie. Because I feel like maybe it could address some of those things later on. But I do think, you know, we mentioned this earlier in the episode, it's important for us to recognize that the, like, visual effects of this movie hold up pretty well, which can't be said about all the early Marvel movies.
No.
So I feel like that was something Marvel found their footing on, like, as they were making this movie. So now, Davis, I'm going to ask you a question that I've been asking all of my guests when we're dealing with these Origins films, which, like, let's face it, phase one. All Origins films, except for Iron Man 2 fits into phase one, doesn't it? But still, could it be an Origins film? Because it's the first time we meet Black Widow? Question mark.
It could be like her origin, but maybe War Machine's?
Yeah, because it's like War Machine, Black Widow, and like S.H.I.E.L.D. is the entity that we know it going
today,
forward. Yeah. So anyways, that's our argument that Iron Man 2 could be considered somewhat of an Origins film, even though it's not technically. But what aspects do you think are essential for a good superhero Origins film?
You have to know their motive to want to be a superhero, because everybody wants to do good, but everybody doesn't want to be fighting everybody. You have to know their motives, and you have to have a good way of delivering how they got their powers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't just say they woke up with powers one day. So that's why I think, like, you know, Iron Man did such a great job because he wasn't motivated. So if you would have just gave him a suit, he wouldn't have done anything with it.
Right.
So him being in the cave and meeting the scientists, I think, were all great things. And so I think for an origin film, you have to have motive and you have to have a good way of delivering how they got powers.
Mm-hmm. And Captain America has both of those things. Yeah. I think, and I think that Captain America does a really good job of showing how he got his powers. And also showing what's interesting to me is that he was the kind of person, like, he had the motive to be a hero even before he had the means to be a hero. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he was that person, and then he got his powers. In a lot of Origins films, I feel like we see, like, someone get their powers and then get the motive.
Well, you think about it, like, Thor.
Right.
You know, he was just a warrior and a prince of Asgard. He wasn't a superhero yet.
Right. But Thor, the one thing that's very interesting to me about Thor is that he doesn't really have the standard Origins film, because he has his powers from the beginning. But it still, to me, qualifies as an Origins film, because you see him become an underdog and earn back his powers. But Thor had his powers, but he didn't have motivation. You know, look at all, like, we have so many examples of Spider-Man Origins films, but, like, usually how the Origins film with Spider-Man progresses is that he gets his powers, and then it's not until Uncle Ben is killed that he has motive. Iron Man gets his motive and his powers, like, at the same time, basically. But, and Iron Man's powers, are they really powers, or is it just Tony Stark being a genius, you know? But with Cap, he's had the motive and the intent his entire life.
Yeah, he just didn't have the means to do it.
Right. So it's an interesting take to me, because it's different from other Origins movies in that regard. And then I think one other thing that a lot of people mention in that's important for Origins films is you have to see your hero as the underdog. And Steve Rogers just is
the most underdog you get.
The classic underdog.
Yeah.
So I was, though, kind of struck rewatching, again, this is because I hadn't seen it in so long, like, the amount of time we spend with Steve as, like, skinny Steve, as they call him, because I felt like it was so much longer, like, in my memory, and, like, rewatching, like, it's really not that big of a chunk of time.
No, you see him, like, in Brooklyn, and then you see him in the camp for a little bit, but then after that...
But they managed to leave such an impression with those scenes, and especially it's his scenes with Stanley Tucci are, like, so good, that you just... You feel like you knew Skinny Steve, even though we only spend, like, a short amount of screen time with him comparatively. So, yeah, I agree with you that I think those are very essential aspects of the Origins film genre. Now I want us to talk specifically about the cast and the characters in this movie. So, watching it, I was blown away by all of the actors that are in this movie. Because we were talking about this before we started recording. I guess that part of the appeal of this movie was, even though it's like one installment in a larger series of Captain America films, it was basically a one-off, because it's set so far in the past that your character probably isn't going to crop back up. So I think that that gave them the freedom to cast a lot of, like, well-known actors. Not that Marvel was struggling to cast well-known actors, but, like, Tommy Lee Jones just doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would want to do, like, 10 Marvel movies, but one. And so I think that that gave this film, like, a unique opportunity. I had completely forgotten, which, granted, she's in, like, a scene and a half, but, like, Natalie Dormer is in this movie. She's the enlisted woman that seduces and kisses Steve that Peggy walks in on. But, like, I guess this was before her, like, big break Game of Thrones and everything. But, like, I guess she'd already done The Tudors at this point, I think. But, you know, she's just... She's one of those actresses that just kind of crops up in everything.
She kind of cameos and everything.
Was very impressed with her. Richard Armitage is another one that I was, like, very shocked that he was in this, again, for just a couple scenes. But, like, Tommy Lee Jones, I was like, how did I forget that Tommy Lee Jones in this movie? And Stanley Tucci. I had forgotten that he was the doctor. So, like, I was blown away by the caliber of the cast in this movie. So, I wanted to ask, before we jump into, like, obviously I want us to take our time with Red Skull, Peggy, Bucky, and Steve. But are there any other, like, side characters or cameos or bit parts that you wanted to talk about before we jump into those?
I think the scientist was very well cast, as you said, because you really, like, see where he's coming from with wanting to have Steve. I think the Howling Commandos were very well cast. I can't remember who play them, but they're great.
It's this is how I refer to them, and this is not their name, so I apologize in advance, but the dude from Suits, the dude from the O.J. Simpson American Crime Story, because the guy who played Judge Ito is one of them. But I agree with you that I think they were really well cast. They were just so underutilized.
Yes.
Yeah.
They really were. And then the other people that were going to take our time on were very well cast, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that Tommy Lee Jones does a great job. Again, I would like to know more about him.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like he's kind of stuck there to be like the stiff upper lip commanding officer. But like, I don't really get time to like develop an attachment to him as a character.
You don't really like him at the end of the movie like you were
right
to.
Oh, one line that we forgot to mention in favorite lines though that has to be mentioned is when after Peggy has kissed Steve and then Steve just kind of looks at him confusedly and goes, I'm not gonna kiss you. It's a good one. So like Tommy Lee Jones does have some like he has some good lines and some good moments, but again I just don't feel like I'm given enough time with his character to like know him. But let's go ahead and jump in with Hugo Weaving as Red Skull.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about his portrayal?
He did very well because the point of a villain, unless they're going to turn into a good guy, is to hate him.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated Red Skull after this movie, so he did a great job. And, you know, before he revealed that he was Red Skull and all, he did good as, you know, just, he really encompasses what you wanted in Red Skull. And I feel like he looked a lot like him too, which is helped to special effects, but they did a great job on his makeup and all.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I like his design, and I like that they don't reveal his design until that confrontation in the middle of the movie. And I think that Hugo Weaving does such a good job with like that like maniacal aspect of Red Skull. You know what I mean? Like you truly feel like he's so unpredictable. Like he's so tunnel visioned in his goal. Like he wants to control the Tesseract, but he's so unpredictable and like
how he's willing
to get there. And he's so menacing and maniacal, like I said. And so I just feel like those are really like important characteristics for a villain to have. And like the scene where I can remember the first time I saw this movie being very like shocked by the scene where the Nazi soldier is like, we fought to the last man. And he's like, clearly not, and kills him.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good moment for revealing, like, just how evil he is. And that he has no regard for the people that are supposedly on his own side.
On his side, yeah.
So, and Hugo Weaving, again, another example of... because I think it's because when I think of Red Skull, I think of his character design, like, with the red face, obviously.
Yeah, the red face, yeah.
So I had completely forgotten that it was Hugo Weaving. And when I saw his human face, I was like, that's V from V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
And then I was like... yeah, Hugo Weaving does a really good job here. Mm. And that's a testament to how good he is and how good the design of his character is that I had completely forgotten about his human characteristics.
Yeah.
But no, I think that he does a really good job. And I think that he, which like Thor notwithstanding, because like Loki is otherworldly, but Loki still has a human design.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He's... well, Abomination obviously is not humanoid in his villain form, but in terms of the origin films that most people talk about in Phase 1, because The Incredible Hulk, like, people take it or leave it. Like, not everyone...
it was just such a forgettable film.
Right, and, like, people don't... I feel like it's when people tell you, like, oh, you can leave that one out in your Marvel rewatch, you know? But in terms of, like, the origins films from Phase 1 that amount to major series, is Red Skull is kind of our first example of a villain that has like an otherworldly design.
Yeah.
And I think they did a good job
with
that. Again, it's somewhat cartoony, but it's like just believable
enough.
Yeah. So what about Sebastian Stan as Bucky?
I think he did, because like we said, he's the complete opposite of Steve, and that's why they work.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he was always the bigger dude. He enlisted in the army before Steve. And so I think seeing their friendship and seeing how they got along, because, you know, opposites attract. So they were complete opposites. And then seeing them back in Winter Soldier and all the movies ahead of that, you were excited to, like, see that they got back together. But that death still, like, hit when you rewatch the movie.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And one thing with Sebastian Stan is watching this movie, it's impossible not to think about the very impressive work he does with the character later on. Because, yes. Like, Bucky here is pretty straightforward. Uh-huh. You know, like, he's straight-laced, all-American guy. Yeah. In a different way than Steve, but still, you know, like the reliable American soldier type. And knowing what he becomes as the Winter Soldier, uh-huh. is just the versatility that Sebastian Stan displays in playing that character. Yeah. One thing, though, I will say, and again, this is back to the fact that this film, the pacing is strange, and there are other things we wish they had have spent time on in this film. I kind of wish we had gotten to see a little bit more of Steve and Bucky's pre-war friendship.
Uh-huh.
Because we get you know, Bucky coming in after Steve's being attacked in the alley, and then we get them on their quote-unquote double date that obviously is mainly Bucky and two girls.
Bucky,
and, and we get their, like, goodbye scene when Steve wants to go try to enlist again. But that's not a whole lot for the friendship that kind of is the, like, core of the MCU going forward. You know,
like, know how they became friends,
Right, and we know that Steve is willing to risk everything for Bucky multiple times in the future. So, knowing that, knowing how intrinsic and important their friendship is to the entire saga, like, kind of wish we'd gotten a little more of it. But that's through no fault of Sebastian Stan or Chris Evans. Like, that's the writing. All right, Hayley Atwell as Peggy Carter.
As Peggy, I think she did a very good job because, you know, you think of, like, women in these superhero type movies of being, like, the damsel in distress, and she was not that at all. You know, she was part of the military, and Cap kind of fell in love with her before she fell in love with Cap, which I think was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, I didn't watch much of Agent Carter, like, when it came out. I think I watched the first episode. But, you know, when you do see her through the MCU, I think she does a very good job of, like, you know, I know that's not the same person playing her. It's, like, an older version of her. But you still, like, want them to work out somehow.
Mm-hmm. I haven't watched Agent Carter. Rewatching this movie, though, I was like, oh, shoot, I'm about to go rewatch Agent Carter. Like, I want to watch it now. I think I love that you brought up that Cap falls in love with her before she falls in love with Cap.
Uh-huh.
Because that's not a dynamic we see
in
the MCU very often. Like, Pepper obviously is somewhat infatuated with Tony. Like, they have their banter, but, like, I think Pepper's a lot more devoted to Tony than Tony is to Pepper early on. Yeah. Jane definitely is attracted to Thor before Thor even notices. So the idea that the hero is so taken with their female romantic foil, like, before the opposite is true, is very interesting to me. I hadn't thought about it that way. But I think that the casting of Hayley Atwell as Peggy was just perfect, and it was so important to the larger Marvel lore. Like, you had to believe that this woman, one, was, like, capable and competent enough that she could become, like, one of the founding members and later the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. And two, that she was worthy enough that, like, Cap would still be hung up on her 70 years later and would ultimately make the decision to, like, forsake his modern life and go back to her. And I believe it. Like, Hayley Atwell is just, like, lovable enough that I'm like, Steve, I get it. Like, and I think that as I was watching it, I was thinking this, and this might be controversial, but I think that in terms of outside of, like, the main heroes, that this might have been the most important role that Marvel cast.
Yeah.
Because she has to be, like, the beating heart of a lot of the MCU, you know? And I'm trying to think, I mean, like, I think that the casting of Pepper was really important. But I think that the casting of Peggy might be the most important like, supporting character in the MCU. So I know people are probably going to flame me online. They're going to be like, no, it's so-and-so. Like, I don't know who it's going to be. I mean, like, Bucky's important too. There are lots of important supporting characters, but I really think that getting Peggy just right was, like, the linchpin of the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you couldn't have the Avengers without S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
So, like, you needed somebody to found them, and she did good on that.
Yeah. And the man of the hour, Chris Evans, as Steve Rogers, Captain America. What can be said?
It was just perfect casting.
It just, Marvel knew. Yeah. Like, Marvel knew from the beginning. They were like, this is the guy.
This is who we have to have play him.
Mm-hmm. He just is Cap, you know? Or Cap is Chris Evans.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just aligned. Like, that's just how it was meant to be. Now, I do want to ask you, Davis, have you ever seen the old Fantastic Four movies?
Yes, that's what I was thinking about.
Because I do think that there are two, like, approaches to watching Chris Evans as Cap, and those are the people who knew him as Johnny Storm first, and then the people who were, like, introduced to him as a superhero as Cap.
Well, you know, they're so different.
Roles.
Because, you know, in Fantastic Four, he's, like, that cool guy, and mm-hmm. he's trying to get all the ladies, and then you see him in Cap, and he's just, like, not concerned about all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's like we were talking about, like, the versatility that Sebastian Stan displays as Bucky over time. The versatility that Chris Evans has shown just within superhero movies, is really, really good, really impressive. But I also think that, back to my theory of, like, Cap is Chris Evans, but Chris Evans can be more things than Cap. Like, I think part of that is rooted in the fact that I knew him as Johnny Storm first. Whereas, like, Robert Downey Jr., like, I knew him as Iron Man, you know.
Yeah.
And that's because, you know, I'm a late 90s, early 2000s baby. Like, I didn't have time to know him as anything else. And, like, this isn't a knock on anyone else's acting ability in the MCU, because the MCU consistently employs, like, the best actors in the industry.
Yeah.
But there's something about Chris Evans where I'm like, he can transcend the role as Cap, you know? And like ScarJo's a great actress. RDJ's great. Chris Hemsworth is great. Jeremy Renner's great. But they are so, like, I will always see them as who they play. So now I want to ask you, Davis, how do you think that this movie stacks up against the larger MCU? Obviously, like, I didn't ask you to, like, prepare a ranking. Like, you don't know exactly, like, oh, this is my, like, 19th favorite movie in the MCU. But, like, if you just were to, like, spitball, like, how you think this one compares to other installments, where do you think it would rank for you?
Probably in the middle somewhere. You know, there's definitely movies better. I think the Guardians franchise was better.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely the other two Captain America movies. I think the first Iron Man maybe beat it. I didn't really enjoy the other two Iron Mans, to be honest. You know, I think the second Thor was probably the best out of those, but I think Captain America the First Avenger beats it. And then all the Avengers pass it, because those were just great movies. So probably somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me, because I've asked that question of the people who are doing Origins film episodes in the series. And all of the Origins films are like, it's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Just, like, they're like, it's good, but later installments are better. But I like, it's, you know, they're not the worst.
No, definitely.
Like, they're still very strong installments. I think it's just a testament to how much Marvel improved over time. But I think that Captain America for me, Captain America the First Avenger would rank, yes, somewhere in the middle, but closer to the top of the middle.
Top,
you know what I mean? Like, probably, it's probably right on the cusp of being in my top 10.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying it's definitively in the top 10, but it's, like, somewhere probably between, like, 12 and 8.
12 and 8.
Like, that's what I'm going. I don't have numbers assigned to them. I think that by our Civil War episode, we should, like, rank them.
One day.
And just so that we know, like, where they all stand. And then I want to ask you, Davis, what do you think about this movie helps it stand out from the rest of the MCU?
Probably just the time period. Because, I mean, we got this with Captain Marvel kind of being, you know, in an earlier time period. But that was such a new movie that it didn't really stand out as much as this one. Because before then, we never saw a MCU movie in the past. And so I think that was really what made it stand out to me.
I agree. This is not the conversation that we're having today, but at some point when I eventually do a Wonder Woman episode, I feel like this is going to come up. But watching this, I was wondering how much of an influence on Wonder Woman this movie was, because there are just certain aspects where I'm like, oh, I see like reflections of that in Wonder Woman. And obviously Wonder Woman's World War One, this is World War Two. But like, I just feel like the coloring and the time setting and everything, and just, and the idea of like the central male ultimately sacrificing himself. Like, there's just a lot where I was like, oh, and this is just because I love Wonder Woman, so I'm always thinking about Wonder Woman. But I'm interested to know, like, if Patty Jenkins in making Wonder Woman was influenced by, like, if she watched and took things from
Cap.
So I always like to close with this question, Davis. It's a 2-part question. Is this movie worth rewatching? And how would you convince someone of that fact? What would you say to someone to convince them that they should rewatch Captain America: The First Avenger?
Yes, it's worth rewatching, but the only reason is if you are watching like a later movie like Endgame or something and you can't fully remember Cap's origin story. That's how I think it's only, because like I said, I didn't rewatch it until watching for this episode, and I could have went without rewatching it. So I think that's like the only reason to kind of rewatch it.
I think that it does absolutely though make installments like Endgame like richer. You know what I mean? Like, knowing, oh, this decision to go back to Peggy is rooted in this movie. So I think that it enhances the larger MCU experience. I don't know that it's, well, I was gonna say I don't know that it's like 1000% necessary, like, that you have seen it to have the larger MCU experience, but it probably is, because I don't think that you can like take Peggy out of, and Howard Stark,
seeing like his father,
because we didn't spend that much time on Dominic Cooper, but I do want to say before we close, like, again, just, he does such a phenomenal job as the young Howard Stark. And this is probably dating me in saying this, but hopefully someone out there understands what I'm trying to say here. Did you ever watch Kim Possible growing up, Davis? Okay, so there's an episode of Kim Possible where they find out that like Kim's ancestor, like her, like, I can't, it's like her great aunt or something, is like suspected of having stolen something. Not, that's not important. What is important is that the episode like goes back in time and shows you younger versions of like ancestors of all the main characters. So you see like, it's like Ron playing like his great grandfather and like Kim's like great aunt or whatever it is, and Wade's like grandfather. And watching Dominic Cooper play Howard Stark has the same vibes as that Kim Possible episode. And that was always one of my favorite episodes of Kim Possible, because I love when things go back in time and show you like an earlier version, or like someone who was the parent or grandparent of someone that I already know and love. So the vibes are just, they're just good.
The same,
and they're the same as that Kim Possible episode. But I think that Dominic Cooper, again, that was another thing where like the casting was just, it had to be just right. And it was. So because of Howard Stark and Peggy, I do think that this is essential viewing for the larger MCU saga. And I do think it's one of my favorite origins films. I'm not saying it's my overall favorite origins, but it's one of the better ones. So I do think that, like you were saying, like, if you really want to appreciate Endgame,
then you need to go back and rewatch it.
And I think it's worth a rewatch, because I would be willing to go out on a limb here and say, because we're pretty big Marvel people. And if we haven't seen it in a really long time, there's probably a lot of Marvel fans that haven't revisited this one in a long time. So if you haven't, pop it in, rewatch it, because you might be shocked that Natalie Dormer is there. Like, all these super famous actors that you're like, where did they come from? So no, I think it's worth a rewatch. Is there anything that we haven't covered in this episode that you think bears mentioning, Davis?
this is a very minor thing, but when they're on stage and they use his old costume from like the comics, I thought it was perfect because I did not want him to see him like go into battle with it. But the fact that they, like they even had him had the old shield and so I thought that was really cool, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's good. It also reminds me of the line when they're like, "Are you sure you can do this?" And he's like, "I've knocked out Adolf Hitler over 200 times." Like, it's that's a good one.
That's awesome.
So yeah, all right, well, I'm just gonna go ahead and close this out if there's nothing else you want to say. So this has been Play It Again, Kyla. As always, if you have suggestions of films you would like to hear discussed, don't hesitate to reach out. You can find the podcast with the handle Play It Again, Kyla on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and you can find me personally at @Kyla_Z_Percival on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd. Once again, this has been Play It Again, Kyla. I am your host, Kyla Percival, signing off and saying I voted for Andy Kaufman.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes.